This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host, and today we'll conclude our chat with one of the top and most engaging and adventurous flute and guitar duos around, the husband and wife Cavatina duo, flutist Spanish-born American Eugenia Molinaire, and Bosnian-born American guitarist Denis Azabajic. As we heard last week, from the minute they met, they've been playing as a duo, and over the course of their careers, they have produced recordings that expand the flute and guitar repertoire, working with labels that can meet them on their creative strata, like Jim Ginsberg and the Chicago-based CD Records, or Becky and David Starobin and the New York-based Bridge Records. The Cavatina duo have made it their credo to engage composers to actively work with them, expanding the repertoire for this combination that already has plenty of music composed for it. The Cavatina also gives new takes on works by established composers and gives them a new sound, such as what you're listening to now from their CD release on Bridge Records of music by the great Argentinian composer Astor Piazzolla, taking his six etudes tanguistique for solo flute and arranging them for flute and guitar. We're hearing the number 3, Molto Marcato e Energico. This arrangement is by the great guitarist composer Sergio Assad, who, as we heard on last week's program, exhorted the Cavatina to explore their own heritage and roots, which they have done in a number of projects, like the one we heard last week, the Balkan Project, inviting composers from across cultural and ancestral heritage to give their new takes on folk songs and dances from that region. We'll start today with another of these projects that begins with one of the most amazing generational discovery stories I've ever heard. But before that, we'll hear another selection from the Piazzolla CD. From perhaps his most popular and recorded work, his Four Seasons of Buenos Aires, we'll hear, what else? Primavera, or Spring, again arranged for flute and guitar by Sergio Assad. I spoke with Cavatina duo via Zoom a couple weeks back. Thank you.
second project, Sephardic Journey. This is a fascinating project. And I guess this one begins with you, Dennis. I know you've told the story a lot, but it's a really great story. So if you could, for our listeners, tell it again. And then it kind of moves over to you, Eugenia. So, I mean, this is just great because it's a story of intergenerational connective tissue, which was not known. Just tell the story and then just your approach to what you wanted on the CD and again, how it turned out.
In 1996, after the war finished, one year after the war finished in former Yugoslavia, so in Bosnia, I went for the first time with Dennis to visit his family. We were already together for several years. And I arrived there and, of course, I already had a little bit of knowledge of Serbo-Croatian. I spoke the language. And, you know, I was very shocked to meet an aunt of Denis, a grand aunt, very older lady, who, when I was left alone in the room with her, she was laying in the bed sick, she started talking to me Spanish, what seemed to be Spanish. And I was shocked. I was like, wait a second. She's talking to me what language? And I went to Denis. I said, Dennis, your aunt is talking to me, sounds Spanish. And he says, no, my aunt doesn't speak Spanish. I said, yes, she does. So we discovered that she was talking to me in Ladino, which is the language of the Spanish Jews that were forced to leave Spain unless they converted to Christianism. And she told the story there, then, that nobody of the family knew, that during World War II, her mother and her were the only survivors of her family. Her father was killed, her brothers were killed, everybody was killed. And she was one of the only two families in Tuzla, in his hometown, that also survived, Jewish family. And so she told me that her mother married a Muslim militar in order to convert to Islam to avoid being killed. Right. So she was very little. Her mother changed her name. And so she was known by another Muslim name and everybody knew her from that name. And so when she met me, she told me, actually, my name is not Razia. My name is Matilda. Actually, she said Matilde, which is a very Spanish name. And I was shocked, of course. And then Dennis was shocked too. Everybody was shocked. So I went back to Spain. We didn't think about that. That happened in 1996, remember? So I went back to Spain and I told this story to a friend of mine. And she says, who is a historian, she says, actually, your last names, Moliner and Ferrer, are also Sephardic. And I'm like, what? And I said, I'm not Sephardic. My both grandmothers are almost 100 and they never spoke about that. Actually, one grandmother turned on the candle every Friday, but she didn't even know why she did it. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. Anyway, long story short, we go back to 2012 or 13. And Sergio Sati is telling us, you should explore your backgrounds and blah, blah, blah. Actually, before, he said that before. So Dennis did the Balkan project. And when it came to do my project, I then thought about doing Sephardic music. Why? Because, you know, I was connecting the dots of in my family, there were Sephardic roots and in his family, there were two. So we had to connect those two things. And we asked permission to the daughter, because his grand aunt had already passed away, to the daughter to give us also, to send us information about the mother, the pictures. You can see in the booklet of the CD, the stone of her, where she was buried, with the two names, the Muslim name and the Sephardic name. And it's a very beautiful story. And so we wanted to explore that music. So I went and I looked for some beautiful melodies of songs. And we proposed to several composers to do what we did in the Balkan project, but in a bigger way. So nice. Longer pieces, not small, but longer. Two of them would be with a string quartet and two of them would be with another string player. So one would be with a violin and another with a cello. Right. Then when we were almost finishing the project, we got a commission without us having to do almost anything with it by the Austin Guitar Society, who had a composer in residence who asked us, he's going to write a piece for us. Joe Williams. Yeah. He says, I'm going to write a piece for you. Do you want any specific idea, something? And he said, you know, we're doing this project. Would you write something based on this?
Yeah.
And then he wrote Isabel, which is the only duo of that CD, which is a 5 minutes or 6 minutes long piece based on real story of a woman who suffered, you know, who was a martyr because she didn't want to convert into Christianism. So that's how the project came about. So we commissioned to Clarice, to Alan, to Carlos Rafael Rivera, and then to David Leisner.
Yeah, and we should say, minding your Chicago base, that these added musicians come from the really, really fine Lincoln Trio, which has been a past Cadenza guest as well. They're great musicians. Great,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great people. This is repertoire which, over the decades on recordings, has either been early music groups or folk-based groups, or, you know, you'll get some Sephardic melodies by some string players, and they'll throw in music of Bloch, or, you know, I'm just saying, this was a very different take when you listen to the CD, how, again, going back to the Balkan Project and what you said, Dennis, is this, these are composers who really sort of mine this tradition anew, put their interpretation on it, but also give it some, I don't want to say freshness, but you listen to the CD and it doesn't sound like other Sephardic CDs. And I don't mean to downplay any other Sephardic CDs. So, I mean, this was a conscious effort on your part, again, to bring this repertoire, to pump new life into this repertoire, to make it new to listeners, right?
Yes.
Well, look, we also came to realize that, you know, we are talking about one project and how ever more I'm convinced about the interconnectedness of us all, right? How truly amazing is that, you know, you have a music that has been written, let's say, 5 centuries ago or so, or more?
More.
Oh, okay, let's say over a period of time. People who wrote that music don't longer exist. They have died a long time ago. But part of their, and I don't want to say DNA, but part of their spirit somehow ended up on a paper. You know, centuries later, it is discovered or rediscovered by other people. You know, traditions keep that up and so on. So sort of like you become part of this continuous human spirit that keeps living, right? And maybe that freshness is there, or maybe that thing when we say, oh, we like this music, but we like to play it, we are connected to it. And those people that you recognize that they have those, you know, talent in writing, you ask them to give their spark and their freshness to it, as you put it. So it's simply that, you know, it's just really nice to create a project that involves talents of many people. And it doesn't stop. You know, it doesn't stop with performers and composers and original composers, people who compose. You know, people like my great aunt, people like her, who have kept that music, that tradition in their communities, despite of, you know, the fact of being persecuted for so long. Yeah. You know, there's also a testament to their resilience and how that spirit lives. You know, then you mentioned before Jim Ginsberg, you know, his love for music and how to, you know, put new projects out and to record them. Then everybody else who's involved, you mentioned our friends and colleagues from Lincoln Trio, David and Desiree, who participated. And last but not least, you know, also donors who underwrite the fees for composers, who are also a crucial part of it. So, you know, it is all one project with many, many important components, none of which can live on its own.
So let's dip into my guest, the Cavatina Duo's recording, this on the Sidi label, titled Sephardic Journey, with two selections, the third and final movement from Alan Thomas's Trio Sephardi, titled Una Matica de Ruda. The Cavatina are joined here by cellist David Cunliffe from the past Cadenza guest Lincoln Trio, and then we'll hear the work that, through serendipity, made it onto this project, Joseph Williams' Isabelle for flute and guitar. Thank you. you know, both the Balkan Project, the Sephardic Journey Project, these could easily spawn future recordings, more arrangements, adaptations. These could continue. Hopefully they will. But I think our listeners have heard how creative the two of you are and how inventive you are as far as your projects. Now, the last one I don't think has taken root yet, or at least not on recordings, is the Gypsy River Fire Project still?
Yes.
Is it going to happen? Put it that way.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Okay, it's going to happen. This is a whole different take on Romani music and the source.
Exactly. Stuff. From around the world. And that's...
Well,
that's,
just think yeah. about... Oh, sorry. Anyway.
That's also an interesting story. We've been in India many, many times. And we know that the Romani people comes from the Rajasthan area. And we always thought about that. We thought about connecting that to where I come from, Spain, where gypsy, flamenco, kind of culmen of the flamenco comes from. And it's a big evolution through that, through so many countries. And it's so interesting to find out that, you know, gypsies haven't been only in Europe and also in Asia, but also in the Americas. So there is a big, beautiful surprise in that project. So we are going to bring the gypsies to the Americas too. So very, very, very cool.
Okay, we will wait for that and exhort my listeners that the minute that comes out to grab that as well and follow that as well. And like I said, I hope there are extensions of the other projects. I know you have so much time in a day, but they're all worthy. The latest CD finds you both in the Baroque period. And you've already talked about this, music of Georg Philipp Telemann, these flute fantasias, which are one of the staples of the solo, meaning solo, flute repertoire, showing up on recitals and all stuff. Again, a different twist by the Cavatino duo is you take these and you add Dennis Yu with accompanying them, and they turn into new pieces. They turn into a wonderful addition to the catalog from their solo flute origin. Is this a path which can continue into other Baroque avenues? I mean, having done this Telemann?
Maybe, who knows? I don't know, it can happen. Yeah. What I want to add to that, what you just explained very well, is that when we did the Piazzolla project, and thought about adding the guitar part into the etudes that were written for solo flute, that actually, let me recall that correctly, I remember I was playing that, rehearsing and practicing in my house, and Sergio came for one of the many dinners we spent together. And I think he and I talked about that. I think if we would write a guitar part for that, that would sound great. And Sergio, having spent a long time in Paris with Piazzolla, I mean, he's an incredible composer besides being a guitarist, but he would be the perfect to write that part. And he helped us to do that. And his daughter, and Clarice, did also part of that etude. That stayed in me, and I remember that I wanted to do a Baroque project since a long time ago. And when I talked to Dennis about this, I said, you know, I want to explore the possibility of adding a guitar part to the Telemann fantasies. And I was reading a lot about how the Baroques were at the time being improvising themselves. Yeah. Whatever positions they had, they would do. So if they would have something that it was written for a solo instrument, but there was somebody extra there, that person would go and add, you know, the continuo or whatever, you know, accompaniment that he would figure out and improvise at that moment. So it was not an unusual thing to do.
No, and I don't know if there are any Telemann purists out there. I'm sure there are Bach purists and Handel purists. But I mean, for them to say, oh, well, he wrote it for solo flute. No, that misses the whole zeitgeist of the Baroque period, just like you said. I mean,
but what is interesting,
they would have been improvising and adding back then as well, you know?
Exactly. But what was interesting about those solo 12 fantasies, the cycle of fantasies, is that he was one of the first composers that wrote such a long cycle for solo instrument. He also wrote it for violin. So I would completely go back and switch that, adding the guitar part. But as you said, it becomes almost a different piece, although the flute part is intact.
No slight against the solo flute versions, but these are really enjoyable when you add an arm.
Well, David, let me just point out to something that you said before when you were introducing us, when you said we are a married couple, and you know, having a duo and being married, it has its advantages, and it also has some other points, as you kindly put it. And Eugenia hinted now to the fact that, you know, I was more, inclined towards the idea of Alan changing the flute part and assigning certain parts to guitar, because I was just super excited, like, you know.
Right.
And we had, well, I don't want to say we almost got to the divorce over the project, but you get a picture of what I'm trying to get.
I hate that discussion.
At the end, Eugenia won as is usually the case, joke aside, she had a very firm idea of, you know, I want these pieces to stay, the flute part to stay as it is, right, and to add the other things. And I'm happy she insisted, and I think Alan as well is happy with the result. And, you know, we have to give like a tremendous credit to Alan to come up with such a very well-written part. You know, to me, it's almost like you have this beautiful diamond, and then if you put too much gold around it, you're going to cover it. You know, you just have to put just enough to set it and that it shines on your finger, right? So that's how I think the Alan sort of did it. That setting, I think it's really, really elegantly and masterfully done.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of repertoire for solo flute, but it pales against the repertoire for solo guitar, Donna. So you can see why she's a little protective of those notes. Guest the Cavatino Duo's latest release on the Bridge record label of music by Baroque composers Marin Marais, and then the 12 Fantasias for solo flute by Georg Philipp Telemann, here with an added guitar part by Alan Thomas. We'll hear two of the Fantasias, the one in B flat major and then G minor. Thank you. final thing here, because we are where we are, COVID, I mean, you're both teaching and all this stuff, and how has it affected you in general?
So, you know, the hardest part, of course, like for everybody, being locked at home and not being able to, you know, to set dates for things,
right?
You know, because you don't know if you will get the vaccination, you don't know if they will open. I, for the most part, in terms of looking forward to projects, we are very lucky because we have had many presenters that we had, of course, to postpone the concerts because of COVID, contact us saying, as soon as this is over, we want you back. We are waiting for you. So we get these feedbacks and we are very excited about that. But day to day, it's a challenge sometimes, not every day, but sometimes it's a challenge to keep yourself motivated and to go and work on your instrument. But in a way, I think being both musicians, we kind of help each other, because if I don't feel motivated one day and I hear Dennis practicing, right, he's in the bottom floor, I'm in the upper floor, but I still can hear him, I feel like I have to go and do it, you know? So for most part, I would say we are both working every day and, you know, looking forward to our next projects, concerts-wise, recording, and right, even thinking about another project, recording project. As soon as this one is done, we are already thinking about the next one and how to do it and what to do. So we are already there.
Yeah, and again, we don't know when that time will be. You know, the warmer weather will bring outdoor concert possibilities, but hopefully the fall will bring, you know, some semblance of normality. And being a duo, even though you're playing a very transmissible instrument, but still, I mean, by that time with vaccinations, this is going to change the arts. It's going to change performing arts and music in ways I don't think we're quite clear yet, but I can imagine, especially the two of you who just thrive on making music, you know, just waiting for this to happen. So, you know, hopefully.
I would like to ask you to elaborate on when you say, what do you think, in which way it will bring the changes?
It's hard to say. It depends on what type of music you're talking about. If you're in a choral group, it's going to be a lot longer road. There's been virtual performances, good and bad. There's been this idea of maybe some rethinking on some large organizations on what they actually program and play, hopefully, with the social injustices we've had to face again last year. I mean, I think there'll hopefully that music will, especially classical music in this sense, but will come out a little bit smarter, a little bit more enlightened maybe from this, because it was taken away so quickly. The curtain came, yeah, boom, and it wasn't like a ramp. And so because of that, I think people really had to think things through. So I don't know yet, though. Nobody's got a crystal ball, right, Dennis? That's what, we'll see. Thank you for this. I close all my Cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two quick questions. Even though you're married, you can answer independently. The first is a hypothetical, which says, if you could chat, like we've been chatting, COVID, via Zoom, but chat with someone from the past, someone you never had a chance to talk to, but could. When I ask that, what name pops into your head? Sometimes you can get flooded with names, but I'm just curious what name pops into your head.
Related to music or any?
Doesn't matter. I've had everybody from God to Groucho Marx. But yeah, you know, Bach is the runaway number one answer over the 17 years of this program, but I've had everything in between. So I'm just curious.
What? Leonardo da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
Of course, he's my idol.
Ah, okay.
I love him. I'm not sure he would love me because I heard he was gay, but I love him.
But he might have loved the flute. You never know. You never know, you know?
He painted La Gioconda, and somebody in France once, when I was playing there, told me that I look a little bit like Gioconda. And I was like, really? Then I started investigating about him. And then he used his own face sometimes to paint, you know, women's faces or other faces. And I was thinking, maybe we are related.
Another revelation in your family tree.
But he is definitely somebody who I admire, the epitome of a Renaissance man. I would love to have a day with him. Yeah.
Okay. Dennis?
Well, you know, there are so many names that come to my mind, but I would also say Leonardo. I wouldn't mind at all having a conversation with him. Oh, my God. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Final question is non-musical. Everybody I interview on this program during normal times fills their life with music. You guys are very busy on many fronts. But when you have to step away from music, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, what do you do? A little respite if you need to get away from your music. What do you do?
You say first.
Oh, well, one of the things that I like to do a lot is to exercise lately,
okay.
Much more than before.
Right.
You know, and I'm, as I told you before, I'm more of a practical man. Eugenia is more an artist in the house. I like to engage with different kind of projects, like, you know, home improvement and things like that, building things, you know, learning about how to fix and build things like that. I like doing things with my hands involved there, something like that.
And to me, that's kind of complex because there are many, many things I like to do. Lately, I don't do too many of them. But one of them, I like learning about, you know, about the universe, about our position in the universe and our knowledge of it. How, through history, incredible men like Isaac Newton or Einstein, Hawking's, you know, their ideas. And, you know, I like to read about everything from string theory to black holes and things like that. That's what I like.
Well, you're safe reading. Dennis, with the house projects, make sure you don't injure any of the digits, okay? Because you need
to. So it's like they dreaming for me and actually doing something for them.
Cavatino Duo, thanks for taking some time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
David. Thanks for having us, David. It was a pleasure.
The Cavatina Duo, Eugenia Moliner flute and her husband Denis Azabajic guitar. You can find out more about the Cavatina Duo at their website, Cavatina, C-A-V-A-T-I-N-A, cavatinaduo.com. And their recordings are either on the Cedi Records label at Cedi, C-E-D-I-L-L-E, cedirecords.org, or Bridge Records at bridgerecords.com. Both labels are also distributed by Naxos, so you can check them out at naxos.com. Strange bit of coincidence fact I found out when speaking to them is that they live near Chicago, in the suburb of River Forest, on a street called Bonnie Bray, that is directly across from the college where I received my Bachelor of Music degree in Composition and Theory, Concordia University, which set me up well to go on for my graduate degrees at Northwestern University. It was pleasantly shocking to find out that they lived there. I thought, what are the chances? But I digress. I'll close by once again dipping into my guest's Sephardic Journey CD on the CD label with the closing two movements from the three-movement work by Past Cadenza guest composer Clarissa Assad. We closed last week's program with her music as well. This is her Sephardic Suite, and the movements are titled La Rosa Poncha and Ay Sarika Bray. The Avalon String Quartet perform along with my guests of the past 2 weeks, the Cavatina Duo. As always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent Past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and wwfm.org.